This is Carolina Business Review. Major support provided by Colonial Life, providing benefits to employees to help them protect their families, their finances, and their futures. High Point University, the premier life skills university, focused on preparing students for the world as it is going to be. Sunoco, a global manufacturer of consumer and industrial packaging products and services, with more than 300 operations in 35 countries.
Someone once said, most news is not worth knowing. That is really to say, it's hard to tease out what the few bona fide current issues that we really need to know and what could affect us and what's mostly noise. Welcome again to the most widely watched and the longest running program on Carolina business, policy, and public affairs, broadcast every week across the Carolinas for more than three decades. Thank you for supporting that effort. With hopefully some reasonable heads, we will unpack some of these key issues that are worth knowing on this program with our panel. And later on, she leads an important North Carolina health care provider, Dr. Mary Jo Cagle from Cone Health.
Major funding also by Blue Cross Blue Shield of South Carolina, an independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association, and Martin Marietta, a leading provider of natural resource-based building materials, providing the foundation on which our communities improve and grow. On this edition of Carolina Business Review, Anna Bevan Gravely from NC Free, Dr. Joseph Von Nessen from the Darla Moore School of Business, University of South Carolina, and special guest, Dr. Mary Jo Cagle, CEO of Cone Health.
Welcome back. Happy fall. Hope you all had a good summer. Anna Bevan, so North Carolina, we'll start with a political question. North Carolina was supposed to have a budget done, $30 billion or so, and it seems to be held hostage by the idea of gaming or casinos in rural North Carolina. How long is that going to, you think, how long is the tail on that? When is North Carolina going to have a budget?
Well, I was actually on a panel earlier this week with the same exact question, and at that point there was hope there was going to be some sort of resolution on a budget either this week or next week, but as the week has progressed, it just does not look like we're going to get anything for quite some time. I think we're going to see full fall foliage and probably Thanksgiving before there's any sort of movement and agreement on a budget. Yeah, they're so pretty divided.
How much frustration? We had Cody Kinsley, Secretary of Health and Human Services, here not long ago, and they seemed a little impatient, especially given that Medicaid expansion was going to happen in North Carolina, but they couldn't do anything without a budget. So that's it's kind of a canary in the coal mine. How much frustration is there among some of the state agencies around this?
Well, I think there's just a lot of confusion, and also, so typically in the past, our budget has taken a bit of time. In 2015, the General Assembly passed a bill that would allow the state to continue to operate at its last agreed upon budget, which was a great, great move so that government will continue to run, people will continue to be paid, essential operations will continue to happen. It's just the new budget and any additional allocations. And so if you're an agency or a group or even teachers and state employees looking for increases or guarantees on projects, you're definitely frustrated by this.
Okay. South Carolina does not have the budget debate because they're done, but they have a surplus like North Carolina.
Yes.
What should South Carolina be doing with that all that extra money? And it's billions now, and it's at least 3 years of surpluses.
Well, one thing that South Carolina is looking at is infrastructure very seriously looking forwards.
Because is that DOT, Joey?
It's largely DOT, yes. And this is infrastructure, roads and bridges, internet, broadband, particularly in the rural areas. And this is going to be critical because we have more population growth expected in the Carolinas and in the Southeast generally than any other region of the country. And of course, that includes South Carolina as well. So with more people moving in, more businesses moving in, infrastructure is going to be critical for us to maintain the strong economic growth that South Carolina has seen and that the Carolinas have seen more generally. So I think that's a priority going forward.
I want to unpack the science of economics a little bit more with you, Joey, but back to you, Anna Bevin, in North Carolina especially. And this is going to be a tough one it's not a fair question, but in a short period of time. So in North Carolina, not just teachers and teacher pay and retention and principals, but you also have Peter Hans now at the head and has been getting high marks. The North Carolina Community College system has Dr. Jeff Cox now, which is a new player, which is widely seen as a force for good. But we've got all of these dynamics going on in the old North State around education. Mm-hmm. So when you take those dynamics and the lack of a budget, is that cause for concern, or was the education piece always going to be a hard fought, bang out war to get what everyone needs?
Yeah, I think education seems to be in its own world and bubble. That is something that is talked about separately, but together with the budget, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
There's the budget conversation and the budget fight and the breakdown of the budget, because it incorporates so many other things. And then there's the discussion of higher education overall. And they lead into each other for sure, because we're talking about workforce development and investment in trying to make our community colleges continue to grow and be better and prosper.
Sure.
As well as university investments in the future.
Do you get the sense, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but we had Phil Berger on the program not long ago, and there was some indication that the General Assembly, at least some element within the General Assembly in North Carolina, wants to do some larger plan around in South Carolina technical colleges and North Carolina community colleges and higher ed, mm-hmm. a four-year type of closer relationship. Do you get any whiff of that?
I have not gotten a huge whiff, but I've also not asked a ton of those questions to be able to get that kind of answer. That is not outside the realm of possibilities with the increased focus on trying to create a competent and strong workforce to back up the strength of North Carolina. With our recent second year in a row CNBC rating of number one state to do business, like, we're looking to find ways that we can continue that so we can get it a third year in a row, as well as additional accolades, but also how far can we push?
Yeah, right, okay. Economic headwinds, Joey, and not just for South Carolina, but I know you can speak broadly. Inflation, clearly inflation. But also, you know, we watched the interest rates rise over a period of time, and there was some specter around worry, but now the cost of lending is higher, the debt level is higher. Is that starting to present itself in a real-time fashion?
Yes, we have seen it start to bite. That first started with the housing market, which has seen a significant pullback in the last 12 months. We've seen mortgage interest rates, of course, basically double in the last 12 months, and sales activity has come down accordingly. It is leveling off in 2023, so that's the good news. But we also look at household debt, which has been going up. Credit card debt has been going up, so we can see consumers affected. And then looking at 2024, it's also important to recognize that most of these interest rate hikes, there are close to a dozen of them over the last 18 months, and it can take 18 months or a bit longer for them to be, for the effects to be fully realized in the U.S. economy. So in 2024, we're still going to continue to see these effects. They are lagged, so we have to be prepared for that. So I don't think we're out of the woods, even though a recession is probably less likely today than it was 6 months ago.
Yeah, Joey, do you think the resumption of student loan payments could be a tipping point for people's personal balance sheets?
Well, it certainly matters. It certainly is a significant effect for some consumers, some students. And that is a one factor among many, but it matters. And when you couple that with the fact that the excess financial reserves that households had because of these stimulus checks, those just now have been exhausted in the last several months over the summer. So you put those two factors together, and that matters for consumer spending going forward. Mm-hmm. And of course, consumer spending is the biggest component of GDP. So that's something we have to continue to monitor very closely.
Okay, so then a quick last question just to that. So do you think holiday sales are going to affect and take a hit because of all the things you just said? Now, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Joey, but I mean, what's your general sense of that?
I think spending is still looking good so far. We haven't seen a major pullback in consumer spending. I think that because overall, in terms of of dollar value, that's going to be up just because of inflation this year. But in terms of real spending, it could be flat or perhaps slightly down, particularly in the goods market, because we've seen the pendulum swing towards the purchases of services and away from goods over the last year.
Okay, we're gonna end the first part of the program where we started, and that's with you, Anna Bevin. As Joey talks about some of these financial markers, if you will, is the North Carolina General Assembly debating about all of that at all as they try to close in on this budget? Are you hearing any of that dialogue?
The biggest way they're having that conversation is through the discussion around tax cuts. Early on, the Senate wanted to accelerate tax cuts. The House wanted to take a more cautious, measured approach because they were looking toward the future and trying to be a little more cautious and able to catch any sort of economic downturn that we have. Mm-hmm. So that's where it's usually, that's where it's showing up largely.
Okay, all right, thank you. Stay with us, please. We're gonna bring our guest on. Before we do that, who's coming up on this program, next week on this program? William Floyd. It might not be a household name to you, but in South Carolina around education and workforce, he is becoming a household name. He is the executive director of what is called the South Carolina Department of Employment and Workforce. He will be our guest on this program. And then also in the very near future, she is Lynn Good, the chairman and chief executive officer, I should say chair and chief executive officer of one of this nation's largest public utilities, Duke Energy, and she comes back to this program. The sustainability of being profitable, delivering high quality service, having satisfied and engaging workforce, and doing it all under a very acute regulatory and public scrutinizing it, is at best difficult. And deserved or not, hospitals have been in that situation long before COVID. Joining us now is the chief executive officer of Greensboro-based, Guilford County, North Carolina-based healthcare provider, Cone Health, Dr. Mary Jo Cagle. Dr. Cagle, nice to see you in person, by the way. You reminded me it was virtual last time we were talking, but thank you and welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. I'm glad you're doing well. COVID. So, Dr. Cagle, here we are talking about COVID and another variant. Are people, and I don't want to put words in your mouth either, is there a lot of fatigue about participating in yet another round of vaccinations and even caring about COVID?
I think there is in the general public, though there are segments of the population that are still paying attention. I think our elderly population is paying attention. And what we're seeing in Greensboro is that our African-American population is paying attention. And certainly our staff is paying attention. Yeah. We are hearing from our staff that they want to know what they need to do to protect themselves and their family. So I think, I don't want to generally say that people aren't paying attention, because I think we have to be more attentive to who we're talking about and who we're talking to. One of the lessons we learned throughout the beginning of the pandemic is we have to tailor our message to the audience. And I think that's true now. Mm-hmm. What we are learning is that COVID's gonna become like the flu. It's gonna be seasonal. Right. It's going to shift from year to year. And indeed, that's what we're seeing.
Is the morbidity and mortality number any different than it was 2 years ago on COVID?
Yeah, it has changed. And in fact, it appears that this variant that we're starting to see now is there's less mortality with it, unless you are very elderly or unless you have greater comorbidities, in other words, other chronic diseases associated with it. And so the version now seems to be somewhat milder. Mm-hmm. And for people who have had the vaccine or boosters, it certainly appears to be milder.
Okay, all right. Anna Bevin, question?
Yeah, as we're looking at a shifting landscape in healthcare, you've touched on some of the thoughts and the research around COVID. How are you guys adjusting in other places to try to sort of get ahead of some concerns around technical issues or just innovation in the healthcare space overall?
Sure. It was great to hear Dr. Von Nessen talking about the infrastructure that South Carolina is working on with broadband, because we are really finding that people are preferring to get care as close to home as possible when that's feasible and appropriate. And so one of the things we really want to see is that happen as well in North Carolina, so that in our rural communities up in Rockingham County, down in Randolph County, that we're able to provide that kind of care. So pre-COVID, only a very small percentage of the visits that we performed were virtual. Today, this past year, in excess of 370,000 visits were done virtually.
Wow.
It's just exploded because that's what our public wants from us. So that's one of the big innovations. And it's high quality care. Mm-hmm. You know, in the past, when we talked about building new buildings, people immediately went to hospitals, but that's not the case today. When we are designing new buildings, they really are looking at the ambulatory or outpatient space, because most of the procedures we think about doing today are procedures that in the past might have been done in the hospital. We're able to do them in the outpatient area, and we're able to do them so patients are able to go home the same day, or certainly by the next day. They are with us for a matter of hours. Their recovery time is much shorter. And they're back to work much faster. Today, our focus is much more on early diagnosis or prevention. And so the focus and the shift of the work and the buildings that we're designing are much different than they were even 5 years ago.
Yeah, definitely.
And so I think that is better for our communities and for the people that we serve.
Joey?
Is the virtual care helping to alleviate any of the labor shortage, particularly in nursing, where nursing has been number one in terms of the occupations where we're seeing a shortage in the Carolinas? So has the virtual care helped in that regard?
Absolutely, it is. It is making a difference there. And I think there's more we can do there with virtual care, but also using other technologies. Using robotics, using AI, using all the other technologies. I believe we're just beginning to leverage those technologies so that the things that are repetitive, that we have, or that have been very manual, that are taking our nurses and other clinicians away from the bedside, from the work that inspires them and is the reason they went into healthcare in the first place, mm-hmm. that if we can take that repetitive manual work and place it with and replace it with technology so that we can put our people back at the bedside doing person-to-person work that inspires them and eliminate some of the busy work and the manual or repetitive work to be done with technology, we can then really alleviate some of the shortages and keep people that have left healthcare because they were overworked or uninspired. I think that can make a big difference, and we're just beginning to touch the surface of that.
Dr. Cale, I don't want to lead you on or put any words in your mouth, but the idea of fixing a particular challenge in business, like the talent in the healthcare worker, Dr. Pat Cawley from MUSC. Dr. Bill Roper from UNC, both sat in that chair within the last few months and both said, when talking about the larger business model around healthcare providers, hospitals, that it was not sustainable. That wasn't their direct quote, but the idea was it's very difficult, regulatory, mm-hmm. transparent pricing, oversight, how people feel about it, trying to get into rural areas. So how do you manage a hospital knowing that the challenges seem just massive?
They are, and I'm sure it's not a secret to you all or to our audience that 2022 was the worst year in healthcare financially that this nation's ever seen. More than 50% of hospitals and health systems in our nation lost money. 2023 has been a turnaround year, and we're glad to report that we have had a good year, and most of our hospitals in our states are seeing turnarounds. But you're absolutely right. And we are having to transform ourselves. I mean, it's like changing the tires of a bicycle while riding it, right? I believe that we're going to have to really understand that most of the care that we give people is going to be outside the walls of the hospital. It's going to be in the outpatient arena or even in their homes. And that the hospitals, we still need good hospitals. There is still some care that needs to be done in the walls of a hospital. Very sick patients, procedures that can't be done anywhere else but in a hospital. We need hospitals for that. And we believe that there will be in the future more pandemics. Travel across the world happens so seamlessly and easily that we're going to have future pandemics. So we need hospitals for when that next pandemic occurs. So we have to have the hospital and its ability to flex and be present for when those difficult things happen. But we also have to have a system of care that's able to provide care at home, that's able to do preventative diagnostic care to say, you're at risk for heart disease, so let's treat you now so that you never have a heart attack.
So well care.
Well care and keeping us well and healthy. And I believe that must be where we go. Mm-hmm. I also think we need to look at our payment system. And instead of paying for every little procedure you have or every little time you go to the doctor, we need to change that. And at Cone Health, we've been on this journey for 12 years now, where we change from every visit of payment to look at what we call value-based care, or what some might call, let's look at how much it costs to take care of a person every month. So what's the cost of care per month?
Fixed rate over a period of time?
Yeah, over a period of time, and be willing to go at risk for that and say, we believe that for this individual, it ought to cost this much per month. And let's work and see if we can do that and let our physicians lead that work. And we've been really successful at that. And we believe that we ought to go there more and more.
Anna Bevin, we have about 5 minutes.
The value-based fees, is that what you just called that?
Yeah, value-based care.
Value-based care. It makes me instantly think of like a subscription to Netflix or anything else. And how have you guys been messaging that? Because I think that's very interesting.
Well, so it's a lot like what our MA plans in Medicare do now. Mm-hmm. It's what the ACOs, the Affordable Care Organizations, have been doing. And I think that's a great analogy of what you do for Netflix. But what we have done, and we've partnered with several insurance carriers to say, we'll go at risk with you. And if we save you money, why don't you split the savings with us? But we can also lower the cost for the patients. And it's the total cost of care, not just what you spend with our doctors, with our hospital, but what they're spending on their pharmaceutical costs, what they spend when they go to the radiology group outside of our hospital walls, which requires then that the insurance companies share with us that total bill, right? And then when our physicians are looking at what's it costing, then really back in that primary caregiver's office, we're looking at how do I keep this patient healthy? How do I keep them out of the hospital? What are the right medications for them to be on? Do they really need this extra radiology test? What are the right tests? And so the goal then becomes to keep the patient healthy, to keep the patient at home, which is really what we all want, right?
So we've only got 2 minutes left, Joey, so let me jump in here quickly. Mm-hmm. So given the typical back and forth that healthcare providers have had with healthcare payers, the insurance company and the hospitals, do they want to play? Do they want to do this?
So we've had success with every payer in North Carolina working with us on this type of risk-based model. Some more than others, which is not surprising because it's a relatively new thought.
Sure.
But we've been able to save every one of them money and therefore save the patient.
How are patients receiving it?
Mostly so far this has been for Medicare aged patients or MA patients. But we have a couple of providers who've been willing to try this with commercial payers.
Is it unique to Cone? Any of your colleagues doing it?
So the first to do it in this country was Kaiser Permanente. So they started that a long time ago.
So they know something about delivering.
Oh, so they know a lot about doing this. But there are others that are beginning to do this. There are a lot of health systems across the country that have begun to do it. But, you know, if we're serious about lowering the cost of care, then let's all put some skin in the game and do it for our patients.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. We have literally a minute left. Sorry, Joey. I promise I'm not ignoring you.
Oh, that's okay.
We have 30 seconds left. AI, is that going to be massive change in the next decade plus?
Yeah, so we're already starting to use it some. On the clinical side, we're using it with our radiologists to help us make certain we don't miss things. We're beginning to use it, again, to address the labor shortages, to help us with the scheduling, to make certain that we're doing the best for our nurses and their schedules, and beginning to learn what are the best applications.
Okay. Well, you seem very excited about all of this. Thank you for coming down and actually being in the studio, making the trip from Greensboro.
Sure.
Nice to see you. I'm glad you're healthy.
Thank you.
Yeah, good.
Appreciate
to see you.
That.
Thank you. Always nice to see you, Joey, and thanks for being
Likewise,
so patient
Chris.
As we overlooked you, but you'll have a chance again. Anna Bevin, always nice to have you on the program.
Great to be here.
Thank you. Thank you for watching our program. If you have any questions or comments, CarolinaBusinessReview.org. Until next week, be safe. I hope your business is good. Good night.
Gratefully acknowledging support by Martin Marietta, Blue Cross Blue Shield of South Carolina, Sunoco, High Point University, Colonial Life, and by viewers like you. Thank you. For more information, visit CarolinaBusinessReview.org.